Hi, everyone. Welcome to Nancy's Metaphysical World and More. Today, I have a great guest, and he's going to be talking about some things, and it's something that always interests me, and it's talking about conspiracy theories. I'm going to welcome to the show. His name is George. So, George, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you, Nancy. It's a pleasure to be aboard.
Now, George, I didn't say your last name because I don't want to mispronounce it, so please say your last name.
Oh, I have great confidence in you, especially if you have a colleague who has some German background, because my surname is German. It's Freund, means friend, and, you know, Dr. Sigmund Freud, I guess, would be a good parallel to get the vowels out.
All right, cool. Now, George, let's talk a little bit about who you are and what prompted you to host your own station, or your own show, I should say. So let's go back a little bit in history. What got you going?
Well, by and large, I found out we were being lied to. And it's just a matter of random chance. At a job I was working at, the company got cheaper and cheaper and didn't put FM radios in the cars, just AM. But all we could agree to listen to was some of the talk radio shows. And we found out that we were basically being manipulated and lied to frequently on many, many issues. And we were just aghast at you know, how deep and prevalent this was. And we just made a pact amongst some of my close friends to challenge some of the orthodoxies that were being spread, because frequently they take our money, get us into wars, or do things that are rather unflattering. And we just made a point of saying, no, we're not going to give up rights and freedoms out of fear and manipulation. We're not going to sacrifice the tenets of a great constitution, and we're going to fight back. And, you know, we just get on air and start changing the paradigm. And we did a very good job at it. And you know, like, I just look at some of the shows we were on as almost miraculous that at a point in time we could come up with the few factoids that would, you know, change the source of the debate and turn it into a victory. And I just marvel, you know, your show is a metaphysical show, so, you know, some of the metaphysical miracles would probably have meaning to your listeners. But I remember when we had a new political candidate in Canada coming on to the horizon, Preston Manning, an ultra-conservative guy from out west to take over the conservative elements of politics. He came to Toronto, and I wanted to ask him about his associations with the Bilderberg Group on Toronto's main talk radio show. And they didn't want that question asked, and they hung up on me twice. And even though they had a radio call-in contest, which generated tens of thousands of calls, I got back through two more times, and the call screeners were just aghast. They said, this is impossible. There's tens of thousands of people calling in, and you're getting through. And I go, well, maybe there's higher forces at play here that want this question asked. And so they wrote it down. They gave him time to prep over the news about this question. And then as soon as I finished asking it, they hung up on me again directly so I could have no rebuttal. But that's how we change the debate. We have to just take the initiative. We're citizens, sovereign citizens and sovereign countries, and we have the right, you know, a sacred right to participate in the way government is structured and ordered, and not to to be manipulated.
You know, I agree with you, George, and I have a very hard time with a lot of the news that we get, a lot of what comes out in the newspapers. And, you know, because I do my show, I'm not really afraid to say anything. If somebody wants to hang up on me, they can hang up on me. I don't really care. But I really agree with you that, you know, we have our rights. But yet, if you look at the way governments, not just ours, but governments around the world are being run, they're really trying to shut down anybody who has a mouth who's not afraid to say anything. And I think that's really a shame, because even here in the United States, you know, we have our freedom of speech, but do we really have it? You know, do we really have it? And I ask people a lot of times, I say, have you read your constitutional rights lately? Because if you have, you got to be a little upset with the way things are being handled. And they go, oh, yeah, no, don't worry about it. Somebody's going to handle it. It's like, yeah, well, understand this. If you guys don't get your head out of the sand, you're going to continue continuously, over and over and over again, get your butts kicked really hard. So it's about time to take those heads out of the sand and put the butt down and start doing something about what all we are losing here in, you know, in our nation, which is a very great nation, but, you know, also around the world. So when I read your bio and stuff, I thought, this ought to be a really good show, because we're going to talk about some things that people may not agree with or may agree with. And either way, I don't open the phone lines. Not because I don't want to get any calls, but because on my show, I like it just to flow. And usually I come up with pretty good questions that I would think most people want to know. So now, George, you have been doing your own show on a station. So give us that station and then tell us a little bit about it and how it got founded.
Well, it's just another twist of fate, a miracle. I ended up in a coffee shop sitting between two guys talking about 9/11, and both of them hosted a show on this network, which is called That Channel in Toronto. It's Canada's biggest internet broadcaster. And we just got to talking and made acquaintance and then a friendship, and then I just started to participate in their shows because they heard me on other formats I was on AM radio. And in time, as circumstances changed, they weren't able to host a show on that network, so I put together my own. I call it Conspiracy Cafe. We air Thursday nights live at 8 p.m. Central Time, and the joys of the Internet, we're podcast 24/7. And with myself and the other talk show that's on Thursday night, you know, we're two of the top downloaded shows in Canada because we go right to the chase. We don't take any manipulations of facts, and we do a lot of research that just gets right to the teeth of the matter on how we're cheated over and over and over again, almost with the same tricks. And they just change. Like one of the ones I had on my last show was, you know, they're talking about bailing out the Bank of Kabul. Well, we just went through this here in the United States with bailing out lots of banks. And then when I look into the background of the central banker of Afghanistan, what are the odds that he worked for an American bank? What are the odds? They're very, very slim. At least I would think so. I would think that people who would be in Afghanistan would be primarily Afghanis, and their background might be in Middle East banking and such like that. But no, this chap, Abdul Qadir Fitrat, ended up working for First Union Bank, and First Union Bank bought Wachovia and kept the Wachovia name. And right away, it just hits you immediately that this is the same plan, the same game. They're going to dupe money out of the American taxpayer and commit what I would call a bank robbery, where you just steal the whole bank or the complete assets of the Treasury of the United States, and no one catches on. And when you look at mainstream media with their millions and millions, if not billions of dollars behind them, why is someone running a small little show here in Toronto figuring some of these things out and peeling away the veneer of what's going on and saying, wait, we have to ask some serious questions about this guy, his background, and how American dollars coming from people who work hard are going to be shifted somewhere else.
You know, and it's a fact. I mean, David Icke has been talking about the Bilderberg Group for many, many, many years. And when he first started talking, they said, oh, you're crazy. And they really tried to make him look like he was crazy and nuts. But all his research proved out to be pretty much right on. You know, and it is repeated over and over and over again. And it's like you wonder, why is it that, like you said, a small radio station with people like yourself can peel away everything like an onion, but yet the normal, everyday public people out there don't? You know, are they lazy? Do they not want to take the responsibility? Because if they peel away the onion, George, my thought is they're going to have to take responsibility to change things, and people are just not changing things because that might take work. You may look bad. You may sound like you're crazy. You may whatever. And so people don't. And that's unfortunate because we basically sold out the United Nations in the United States. And for what? You know, they have the Bilderberg Group out there. And, you know, would you like to explain a little bit about the Bilderberg Group so people who are listening can understand it?
Oh, yes. That one was one of my little pet peeves. One, just because of my Polish-German background, when you hear secret meetings and our politicians participating in these things outside of outside of any media where you can find out what they're talking about, like, it just sets my hair on fire because my grandfathers lived through this stuff in their generation. They're the ones who paid with their lives, paid with their fortunes, you know, were just left destitute in the 30s and such like that. So when you look into the background of this group, this was a German, reorganization of the Nazi Reich. The Bilderberg Group was founded in the early 1950s by Prince Bernhard of the Netherlands, who, before he married into the royal family, was an SS colonel. Well, that just, I don't like the leaders of my country or your country or anybody else's having secret meetings in a group founded by a guy who was the SS colonel. Yes, he resigned from the SS, But then he became the intelligence officer for IG Farb and the company that made the Zyklon B gas, and that upsets me even more. And when you talk to our politicians, and I've nailed a few to the wall and just said, come on, you got to know what this is. You can't plead ignorant. And then they just squirm and worm, and then finally they'll come out with it. But why are they controlling the debate? Why do they own you? And this just isn't proper, because generally, if we make a decision, I feel the people, properly informed, will make the best collective decision for our nations. And what I'm finding is these small little cabals of intelligentsia or rich people or whatever, it seems the decisions that they're making are having disastrous consequences. So Daniel Estulin, in his book about the Bilderberg, says they're doing it on purpose to destroy our nations, which may very well be the case. But at the same time, we have to look at decisions that are made by the just mass electorate are in the best interests of everyone collectively. The rich will still be rich, the powerful will still be powerful, but you'll still have a job, you'll still have a house, you'll have a decent life. And I don't see that there's anything wrong with that. And stealing the debate to give it to these people, who I question very, very heartily, because if you're doing something right, you and I are going to talk, and anybody can listen.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, we have nothing to hide. We're not conspiring against anything. We're not plotting against anything. We're just looking at our surroundings, analyzing it, and sharing what we see with other people, and they can give us input, and then we make a better solution, a better decision. But this group just seems fiendish to me, and I'm very, very concerned, because after World War II supposedly ended, the Germans put together a plan in 1944. They met in Strasbourg, Germany, to attack us, because we were allies in the war, covertly with the stolen money that Germany took from virtually everyone, their special forces and their intelligence agencies, and they were going to attack us from the inside and infiltrate us. And that started with a group called the Galen Organization in the post-World War II era. And they worked as a de facto CIA. They were hired as like a contract agency. And Reinhard Galen ultimately became the head of West German intelligence after he came out of the closet, so to speak. But these people were nefarious. You know, they were assassins and killers and war criminals. Why did we take them in wholeheartedly? Some of them were even put on the salary of the United States government. And this is in 1950s, where they were getting $50,000 a year, which was a king's ransom. I don't even think surgeons were making in the mid-20s back then. And they got to meet the president at Camp David. And these are renowned Nazi war criminals. So that just sends shivers down my spine to think that a plot so devious, and one at least a little bit of public knowledge came out in the BBC, because they arrested a lot of them in Britain, I believe in 1953, before the Bilderberg Group was founded. And they had 10 tons of documents to back up their story. And unfortunately, what the British did is they sent them back to Germany for trial, and then after a few months, they were released without charge. And that is just mind-boggling, because the head of that group was Mr. Goebbels' right-hand man, and he was just let loose, and they just went about their business to continue attacking us and getting revenge for what happened to Germany from the inside. And then when we look at two of your presidents, only because they're related, but you know, they were very instrumental in financing the Third Reich at its beginning. George Herbert Walker and Prescott Bush were fundamental in funding Nazi Germany. And my own belief, because economics was one of my interests in university, is the Depression had absolutely nothing to do with the stock market crash. It was capital flight. 70% of America's investment dollars from Wall Street were going to Berlin. If you sent 70% of Wall Street's investment dollars to Botswana, it would be a G8 nation. Just like that. And then the trouble is, when that money went overseas, there was a major vacuum effect in the United States that made the Dust Bowl. And people suffered for that horribly. And then after that, a big war started, which was another oil war, because Stalin nationalized the oil wells, and the big companies wanted them back. So they paid Hitler to attack Russia. And we got suckered into this. So many millions died so that they could try to get their stuff back. And the big, rich fellow in charge of Shell, which was, you know, basically a Dutch royal family operation, was a fellow named Sir Henry Detterding. And he was like the number one rich man in the world next to J.P. Morgan. And he gave Hitler 30 million British pounds as a campaign contribution. That's a king's ransom even today. But in those days, that was like 100 king's ransoms. How could he not get to power and take control? We put him there with these dollars. And then we fought a stupid war over it. And we suffered so much. And I don't want to see that ever happen again, because now it's the nuclear age. Wars may be the end of war. We have to come to terms with the fact we're not going to be cheated, we're not going to be manipulated, and we're not going to have World War III.
And it actually looks, you know, like if something doesn't start to change, that there will be some type of another world war. And it won't be pretty. You're very right about that. And a lot of people will die. But it's almost like the higher-ups, whoever they may want to be, don't really care about lives that are being spent and lives that are being lost. I mean, you can tell just by the wars, you know, the war for the oil, the war for gold, the war for all this stuff, which makes absolutely no sense. There's enough money in this entire world that not one single person in this world would ever starve or be homeless. But that's not the way it works, because there's too much greed and power going on. And until that greed and power gets neutralized, we're going to keep getting worse and worse things happening to us. And I know that everybody thinks, not everybody, some people think that, you know, our new president is the answer to end all be all. And I really disagree with that. But, you know, I'm just one little old peon here who has a voice, and I tell people what I think, and they all look at me like, you've got to be crazy, Nancy. How could you possibly think our government is still going to continue to do the same things that they've done year after year after year after year after year? I go, well, it gets habit forming, and apparently we're still in a habit. You know, so it's kind of scary out there, and there will be a lot of changes coming. Now, you did a report about the Polish airplane crash.
That's correct, because, you know, being half Polish, you feel the pain because lots of your family never came out of the war alive. And the other major factor that we tend to forget in history is Poland was invaded from both sides. It wasn't just Germany. Russia attacked from the other side. And they split it in half and kept it. My family was killed more on the Russian side of the war. And, you know, so why didn't we wage war against Russia or say, get out of Poland? It was only, you know, the staged part with Germany. And you see the patterns over and over and over again that, you know, things happen, it's covered up, but there was just no mistake. Shortly after this happened, a YouTube video went out where a chap who happened to be in the field near where the plane crashed started filming at the site of the plane crash. And he was told in what I believe is Belarusian, as my researchers tell me, to get out in rather unpolite terms. So that's why a lot of people couldn't properly translate things, because translation machines don't do swear words. And when you're facing imminent death or something, sometimes they resort to that. And that caused a bit of the difficulty. But an older man told this guy to get out in rather unflattering terms, because it was very dangerous. But in the video, you see in the background someone walking around the plane wreckage with a pistol, shooting it. So who are you shooting? You're killing the survivors, what few there may have been. And it was a low-to-the-ground plane crash. Frequently there's survivors, and that didn't seem to pan out. It seemed very unusual. But then when I started to look into the history of what was going on in Poland at the time, there was just a massive amount of information to say this was a hit. And one is, this was the second trip. There was a schism in the Polish government. The president went on a special flight with all the people who were killed, but the prime minister, Tusk, he went before on another flight. So there wasn't unity to even go to this ceremony. He went a couple of days before. The Russians installed new lights on the runway and new equipment that was taken away after the crash that wasn't there for when the prime minister went there. So that tells me they were doing, as my grandfather used to conveniently call, monkey business. And that causes a great deal of alarm. A few years before this happened, actually quite a few years, but in the early 90s, Poland started a NATO within NATO for oil security. So Poland, Hungary, Czechoslovakia got together, and they formed a pact, and they copied it after an ancient pact from the 1300s named after the Visegrad Castle, and they called it the Visegrad Group. And they didn't want oil from Russia. They didn't trust it because Russia turned off the oil for the Ukraine, made them suffer. They wanted to get oil from the Scandinavian countries separate from Russia. And Russia infiltrated the Polish intelligence agencies and tried to take over Poland's national oil companies and such like that. It was a horrible event. The president of the oil company ended up being arrested, which is just, you know, you just don't see chief executives getting hauled away too often. And great shenanigans went on in this battle to control the Polish intelligence agency. The Polish parliament broke their intelligence agency up into two parts because I guess they just couldn't trust them, and they were worried about this infiltration of Russians. And then here, all of a sudden, a nationalist president, one who's anti-Europe, one who wants to have an independent, secure oil supply for his country, and all his staff and everyone in the Polish elite are all killed conveniently. You have the pictures of the gunshots, and then unfortunately the poor man who took them died 3 days later in a hospital with really, you know, no explanation. And, you know, I think we can just pretty much assume he was murdered or taken out of the picture. We have to ask ourselves, this was a complete and total elimination of the government of a country of Europe, one of our allies, newfound allies. Just scandalous. And as soon as this happened, well, of course, Prime Minister Tusk took over, deals are canceled, a new liaison with Russia comes to play, and everything swept under the rug and everybody goes back to sleep. And if these types of activities to control oil supplies, even for just a few nations in Europe, are so violent that we can actually consider eliminating a whole head of state and entourage, then the world is still a very dangerous place.
I would agree totally with that. You know, I've always had questions about, well, a few things. But one, of course, since 9/11 has just passed, and people are still having a very hard time with that, and the fact that they want to do a mosque there right at the site. I mean, there's a lot of different stories coming from a lot of different angles. But my theory on the 9/11 was that it was, without a doubt, an inside job. And anybody that really looks at it and studies it can find that out. And you do not have to be an investigative reporter or, you know, a FBI agent or anything else. All of it is right there. So, George, can you give me your theory about the 9/11?
It's a classic false flag operation. In American history, conveniently, I just happened to finish reading about Pearl Harbor, a classic book called Day of Deceit. And that has the declassified documents in it. So there's nothing really up for debate. There's orders there from the Secretary of Defense, or in those days, you know, he had a different title. But there's letters there from George Marshall, the chief of the defense staff, ordering the soldiers, sailors, etc., on Pearl Harbor not to shoot at the Japanese. And then with that classic telegram thing, stop, do not fire, stop, repeat, you know, those sort of things.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just mind-boggling. But what happened in the day is Roosevelt used this as a false flag operation to get us to fight fascism, or primarily you, because we were already in the fight,
mm-hmm.
because he was afraid of fascist elements taking over the United States. And the anti-war movement was a good 90% in favor of staying outside of a European war. That changed overnight to like 99.9% saying, let's get involved in a European war. Classic application of the false flag. Lieutenant Commander McCollum of the United States Navy, born in Japan, raised in Japan, son of an American diplomat, wrote the plan. He was told, what can we do to aggravate the Japanese so that they will come and get us, regardless? And he wrote a plan with many points, and he said, you do these things, they're coming for you. So they knew. They broke the Japanese codes. That's in many, many books. And then I look at 9/11 as the fascist elements who may have been controlling the White House looking at the same type of plan. Let's have a false flag operation and totally turn everything around to destroy democracy in any form, even though you're a republic, in any form in the United States, and turn it into a fascist state overnight with a war scenario. It's a reverse Pearl Harbor. And it was brilliant. Brilliant. You know, they even admitted it in the PNAC document before it happened, that what we needed was a new Pearl Harbor. So being a policeman of trade from before, if I'm looking at a crime where you possess a weapon and you put together some sort of writing that you're going to use a weapon and do something, and something happens, you're on my short list of suspects. There's no way out of that in any other investigation. Because you said you were going to do it, you had access to the weapon, and it happened. You know, 9 times out of 10, it's you. So how they get eliminated from being even thought of as a suspect is mind-boggling, even just from the incompetence. America is the greatest military power that ever lived in history or existed. And the fact that someone could bypass trillions of dollars of money spent in defense, get past all the computers and satellites and everything else, and attack America and even the command center of its military, and get away with it, and the best I get is like a line from Barney and Andy of Mayberry as a response. Everyone in the administration should have been fired and put out in the street, because in any job I ever had, if they come in the morning and there's a big hole in the ground where the city was, they'd be saying, well, what were you doing all night long? You're fired. Get out. Someone else is going to figure it out. But it won't be you. But in this instance, the criminals got control of the crime scene. They dismantled it, which is another major red flag that something's happened. And they sent stuff out to China to be destroyed. They didn't have it properly analyzed. Things were covered up. They bring in this guise of national security to cover up any documents or people or evidence. But the big thing is they use our emotions against us. And that's something we have to train ourselves for when these things happen. And I was really blessed that a woman who was about 12, 15 years older than me helped me out in a lot of my research. And right from moment one, she just goes, this is a false flag operation. It's the Reichstag fire all over again. And at first I found that a bit shocking because I was just getting into learning about what's going on in the world and how it works. But I just knew from her experience, she knew right away from pattern recognition, this is what we're dealing with. And before we fight, we got to analyze what happened, how it happened, so that we don't get into a false flag fight. Because if we do, you know, we send our sons and daughters to die for nothing, basically to profit whoever set it up. And that is so sad, just so sad to see these things happen, you know, because so many more lives are lost. It's bad enough that lives were lost, but that so many more have been lost and ruined over this, American and non-American. It is just, it breaks your heart. It really does.
Do you think that it was really bin Laden that had everything to do with this?
No, it's impossible. The level of technicality of the American military is just so advanced. There is absolutely no way in hell that you could do this unless it was allowed to happen. So I coined a phrase sometimes, I called it lie hop and my hop, and I see it starting to get around on the internet. Let it happen on purpose is the same as making it happen on purpose. So you know it's going to happen, you turn your back and you allow it to happen. You know, these people at best were agent provocateurs, people recruited for this false flag, used and thrown away.
I mean, anybody, George, that really watched the towers come down would know that they had been imploded, not exploded.
Oh, exactly.
Like what they wanted us to believe. I mean, they came down very symmetrical, you know, and they did just the damage that they wanted to be done. Now, there's been all kinds of theories as to reasons for that, and I mean, it's endless. But I remember when it first happened, there was one video that I saw one time, and it was only on one time. And that video had bin Laden walking into a hut with some other leaders, advisors, whatever. And it was actually, it was translated by a person who was not in the government, by a person who was living here in America, and by a person who knows how to speak their language. And the comment was, bin Laden said, we were told it was going to happen on Thursday. Okay?
Ooh.
All right, which is a perfect indication that he's not the one who did the order. You know, he may have trained them. I'm not going to say he's an angel. He may have trained them, but that was on one time and one time only, and it was never shown again.
And those are the valuable pieces of information that tell you that what we're up against is so overwhelming that they can control all debate, all opinions, and bury the news that, you know, basically it's all selected and controlled. But we do have a power, and it's something I use on my show a lot to tell people, is you have the power, and people listening already know what that power is. You can change the channel. You can turn them off. Once you realize, like, if I come to you and I lie to you and I cheat you, are you going to want to listen to me again?
No.
Nope.
Right? Like, you're kind of burning your bridge. So once you, and the other thing, too, is it's like water. Maybe you have to live in a place where the water is brown and dirty, but that's all there is and you need it to live. And then one day I come with some nice, clean, sparkling bottled water from an artesian well in a real bottle, and I give it to you to drink. And you're just overwhelmed that there could be such a thing. You can never go back to the brown water and say, I like that. I need that. It's like, no, I want the real thing now. I've tasted it. I looked at it. You know, I've seen it. I've held it in my hand. It's beautiful. You can't go back to the poison anymore or something that's substandard. And that's, you know, my fate in life now. I can't watch or listen to this stuff. It is just so asinine and insulting that, I would just want to throw up and run away or something like that. I can't listen to it. So I guess that's another reason why you got to do a radio show, is you got to have a change. And the people that participate and follow my show are so brilliant. The research they do, the things they find, you know, this is, it's a team effort. It's not just me. There's people from all over, different walks of life and such that, you know, hand you the ball. Maybe they're not skillful enough to throw it, but they know it's a ball, and they know if they give it to you, you will throw it. And that just changes the whole paradigm, and we become, you know, basically a community of looking for truth and answers. And we've been lied to so much, it's probably the financial ones coming over the horizon now that may scare people. And, you know, because if you lose your money or you lose your job, well, now it's deep and personal. You have to listen.
Right,
and
you
we can't let this happen. You don't deserve it. You've been cheated. You know, we're ruled by just the flim-flam man and woman. And you don't deserve it. Nobody does. We would take, you know, any. I was cheated. I believed the lies before. But then once I realized it, then I started to say, no, no more. I take it as a given the first time or two that I hear anything about anything, it's a lie. Then I get a half-truth. And maybe after a period of time, I'll get the truth. But it's never going to come at the first utterance.
Mm-hmm. The other thing, you know, that people might want to think about, and I'm not really prejudiced in any shape, way, or form, but there had been talks about the United States not necessarily backing Israel and taking our troops out of there and stuff like that. And then it was shortly after that, probably within a month or two, that the 9/11 occurred. And people have said over and over again that there was not one name on that list of 3,000 that was killed that day that had anything to do with Israel. And it makes you kind of wonder what that deal is, too.
Israeli intelligence is brilliant, and you have to give them credit for that, because that's your job, to look after your people and not let them get killed or injured. And the same thing happened in London on 7/7. Netanyahu was there for an appointment, and he was told before the terrorist attacks that there were going to be terrorist attacks. So if you can have that much foreknowledge twice, and the mayor, a former mayor of New York, was in London as well at the same time, so the rogues gallery was assembling, it appears, how do these things happen that you have this prior knowledge? And by having prior knowledge, that also means you could have stopped it. And if you weren't stopping it, you were letting it happen. And if you were letting it happen, does that mean you were making it happen? Because one of the best explanations I've ever had from one of my fans about what happened on 9/11 was looking at it from an Israeli perspective and how many people were in key positions that were either Israeli nationals or affiliated with organizations that would have a lot of business with Israel. And it's just absolutely mind-boggling. And, you know, one of the ones involves one of your own cabinet people, was an undersecretary of defense. His name was Dov Zakheim. He was the controller of the Pentagon and the Department of Defense at the time of 9/11, and he came from a company called Systems Planning, which made a device called the Flight Termination System, which allows you to take over up to 8 aircraft in flight from either on the ground or in the air and operate them by remote control. And one of the big questions that people had from the videos is when one of the planes is crashing into the World Trade Center, there's a flash under its wing. And a lot of people couldn't explain what that is. And when I looked into the flight termination system, I found it had a self-destruct feature. So if you blew it up before impact, you're just going to find a whole bunch of resistors and diodes and pieces mixed in with a whole bunch of other pieces. You'd never understand what it came from if you ever found a piece. And that just really blew me away, because this man also was a contributor to the PNAC document, the Project for a New American Century.
There's a lot of talk, George, about a new world order coming in. Do you know anything about that?
Oh, lots. And that's one of the funny ones where you'd be labeled a lunatic or something. But I remember on one call-in show, I just told the hostess, have you ever been to a public library? They still have them. And if you go to the political science section, you're going to be overwhelmed with the books on political science advocating a new world order. And one of them, you know, that I picked up, I actually bought a couple because they were so well written. And I feel the best thing to do is study my adversary's words, pick out the flaws, and give them back to him and say, this is where your argument is flawed. And, you know, one of the classics was called The End of the Nation State. Well, it's kind of hard to debate that there's not a plot to destroy the nation state and to have it replaced by a supranational body. And that's one of my little pet peeves with these people, is there are basic laws of the universe. There are also basic laws in economics. And if we're going to make something bigger, and a lot of the megalomaniacs just figure, well, if it's bigger, 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 it's better, 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 and they feel more powerful because they're in control of more. But one of the most basic things is called the economy of scale. Something can only grow so big, and then it becomes inefficient, and then it falls in on itself. And there's nothing you can do about it. It's one of the laws of the universe. And if these people think for a minute that they're going to make a supranational world body that's going to violate the economy of scale, you're doomed to failure. It's like saying, I'm going to leap off a building and float up into the sky. Well, maybe that could possibly happen, but 99.999% of the people are going to plummet to the earth. So why would you do it? You'd have to be mad. And why would we let mad people run the world? And another very simple law of economics is you can't ban anything. And this is something when you're dealing with politicos who feel they have power to do stuff, well, it violates the laws that are called supply and demand. Everything has a supply and a demand curve. And whatever you do to one curve is proportionately and directly undone by the other curve. And there's nothing you can do about it. It doesn't matter if you like it or you hate it. It just doesn't matter. Whatever you do to try to ban something and change one curve, the other curve automatically undoes. That's just a law of the universe. So why are we wasting so much time and money on the war against drugs or to come up with any other kind of ban? The only thing you can do is regulate and control. Banning just cannot work. And you just see the madness of everyone in pretty much my government and your government participating in banning, especially narcotics, when it's physically impossible. It violates the law of supply and demand. And then I just hit myself with my little ball-peen hammer and go, they're running the whole economy and they don't even understand the most basic concept of economics.
No, all they understand is greed and power. And whoever, you know, controls things like that controls a lot. There's a saying that whoever controls the food supply controls the nation.
Definitely.
Now, right now, here in this nation, we are going under all kinds of stuff. I mean, there has been a law that has been passed that was signed during the Gulf oil, from what I understand, that is actually going to eliminate all alternative health, whether it's vitamins, herbs, or whatever, and pretty soon we're not going to be allowed to have those. Now, a lot of people are hoping that gets turned around, because many people are starting to wake up to the fact that alternative health and different things like that is much better for somebody. But I find it, you know, very, I don't even want to say strange or funny, but I find it very important that people understand that there are a lot of smoke screens put up with a lot of different things to get a lot of things passed or people not paying any attention to. Even like the Gulf oil spill. Do you think it had anything to do with any kind of conspiracy theories, or do you really think it was just an accident?
I don't think it was an accident, and part of the reason is the company that does the reporting to all the companies that are contributing was on the rig, and they were sending up-to-date analysis. And I believe the company's called Schlumberger. And when they saw what they saw, they immediately informed their employers and the contract people that were hiring them that this was immediately something is going to happen, shut the thing down right away. They were told no. And they said, well, we want to be helicoptered off right away. No. They called their head office, and a special helicopter was brought in to get their staff off immediately. So that means it's like you and I are driving, and I go, hey, Nancy, the bridge out sign's there. Oh, yeah, that's okay. Maybe I'll turn up the music. Nancy, the bridge out sign's there. Look at all the pieces. You know, there's no mistake. That's all you have to do is step on the brakes and stop the car, and it's not going to happen. So based on what Schlumberger and their people saw and observed firsthand, you know they let it happen. And if they let it happen, there's no other conclusion that you can draw is that they made it happen. And one of the other nasties is, you know, our classic Halliburton bought the company that deals with oil rig explosions conveniently a couple of weeks before this happened as well.
Yeah, and it was really funny. There was another thing that came out, and I really don't listen to news a lot because I just can't stand it. Every now and then I'll check out MSN.com, and they came up with the thing about how certain people in one day made over $25 million. And the one guy who was in charge of BP that's now going to be losing his job had sold all of his stocks or something 2 weeks previous to this and made $48 million.
Aren't they lucky?
Yeah. No? And they went on to name Halliburton, too, by the way, in this thing saying, you know, this is what the people made because now they're going to get the thing for the cleanup and everything else. You know, my other thing was the Haiti earthquake. You know, we had Katrina here in the United States, and it actually took our government over a week, and I do mean over a week, to send out military help for these people who were in Katrina, who were suffering with no water, you know, everything falling apart. But when it came to Haiti's earthquake, they were there in 24 hours. 24 hours, the whole thing was locked down and secured.
Exactly. And, you know, I remember that one well because, like I say, you're Americans, we're Siamese twins. You know, you bleed, I bleed. And, you know, I know on the Friday before the weekend came, I went on every radio show I could get on in Canada, the United States, and I just begged people, before the end of this business day, you do everything humanly possible to call your congressman, your senator, your member of parliament, you know, anyone you can get a hold of. Don't let the weekend go by with nothing to happen or nobody to shake really, really hard because, you know, 3 days without food and water is pretty much a death sentence in a situation like that. And, you know, hopefully there were a good number of people. The sad part is many people attended in person, and that's how you know how bad this was, is they turned them away. Big companies sent tractor-trailer loads of survival material down there, and they were stopped and turned away. Like, that's unfathomable, because These are your people. These are fellow Americans. How do you stop truckloads of relief supplies coming to your own people? It, you know, it's mind-boggling, just mind-boggling. But from the videos I saw of this happening, when the storm passed, people came out into the street, and there was no water in the street. And then the barriers were blown, people were reporting explosions, and then the water started coming. So was this another type of false flag operation? But what was most disturbing is the President of the United States was celebrating a birthday party, playing his guitar. Well, one of his major cities is drowning. And, you know, maybe I look at some of the Americans from many generations past, but some presidents would have been waiting in the water, pulling the people out and bringing them to shore. Like if Teddy Roosevelt was alive and he was near New Orleans, try and stop him. Where have we gone wrong to allow, you know, just the baseless, useless people to run our country and have absolutely no care or concern about it? But on the ground level, you know, I remember reading a story in a magazine, maybe it was Time magazine, about a volunteer fireman from Texas, only 18 years old, volunteering and going to New Orleans and just going through hell and back again to save people and pull them out of the water with a boat he got from some security that might have been affiliated with one of the oil companies or something like that. It just broke your heart to know how beautiful some people are. And I hope someday a boy like that grows up to be president of the United States.
That would probably be pretty cool if he did. However, you know, there's a few doubts. Some of the things that were said about Haiti, do you know anything about HAARP? The HAARP
yes.
Okay. Is that it was caused by HAARP. And
big
one
thing.
Of the reasons why people say that is because they have determined that there is a lot of oil under Haiti and a lot of gold. Now,
yes.
Okay. A lot of people do not know that, and a lot of people refuse to believe, again, that any government, any place, would create such a horrendous thing as to have all these people killed and died, and for what? For the gold and the oil. But I would tend to believe it's a fact. So can you tell us a little bit about that?
As I recall, you know, I wish I would have had a prompting on this one, because I did do a show on this, probably a couple. But I did have a YouTube video of someone who shot film of the sky, and they saw that classic, you know, distorted rainbow effect in the sky before this happened, which is a classic example before some of these events that are thought to be HAARP. And some of the things I did find, I won't be able to name the companies because I'm just doing it from memory, but there was a company, a mining company, that was in the Dominican that was on the fault line that had some ownership issues that would lead one in the general direction of the usual suspects. And they just happened to be doing some special work down there that was done in secret without the usual, you know, miners or officials or bureaucrats being involved in it. It was some sort of like training center mine, but it was right on the fault line. And they could have easily set this up at the time. But you know, I can't name the company off the top of my head, but that's the other thing, too, is just like the nature and quality of the quake was very localized. It wasn't like a normal earthquake. It was more like an event happening in an immediate area, but limited to that immediate area. And if you're having a major fault line shift, well, then everything's got to shake because it's attached. So you might not have the devastating effect, but you'll definitely know there was an earthquake, and that didn't happen either. It was very localized and precise in a certain area, like it was aimed.
Yeah, and again, a lot of people, you know, don't quite get it. But at the same time that they were doing the Haiti cleanup and everything, there was a major, major earthquake in Chile. It got very little recognition, and very few people knew about it. It was an 8.5 earthquake, which is almost enough to split everything apart. But there was not a lot of news about that.
Well, as I recall from that earthquake, and I'll go through my emails and send you the picture National Geographic took, and you can't deny for a minute that it's not a HAARPquake, because, and can you imagine, you ever tried to take a picture of lightning or something like that? Like, the odds are pretty slim, but National Geographic was on site, and they took a picture, and it's done to their standards, so you're talking like professional photograph of professional photographs. And just probably by Googling those search terms, you can find it yourself very quickly. It was the most bizarre effect I've ever seen photographed, where you have this like giant black cloud, an ashen-type cloud with bolts of electricity, like lightning-type electricity, is flowing through this cloud at the exact moment of eruption, contact, devastation, or activation of a HAARP machine. And it leaves pretty much little doubt in your mind that such technology exists and is being used in the world. You know, Secretary of Defense Cohen admitted it himself in the 1990s that this can happen. I think it was Popular Mechanics devoted an article in World War II about the volcano bombs that they developed in World War II, which are just absolutely mind-boggling, too. They were going to use those against Japan because there's many volcanoes. and tried to stimulate some sort of natural event to do enormous damage to Japan. So that's 1940s. We've come a long way. And the other most classified project, other than the Manhattan Project, was the tsunami bomb.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just fortunate the New Zealand government declassified their documents so we could know that this project was in existence. And their major contributor, I can't remember the professor's name, but he dropped out when the project went nuclear. So if they've been able to create that and any other type of event, you can't know you've been attacked. It's the most brilliant weapon going, because you can lay a first attack on people and nothing happens. And my show, you know, part of the ones we're working on is the jet stream stopped. And then we had these fires in Russia that just happened to devastate all their military bases and take up basically like a nuclear first strike on their nuclear, chemical, and biological infrastructure. Well, who's friends with them? Iran. Pakistan is their big ally, and at the same time they have enormous floods, something of biblical proportions, just happened to come along. And, you know, but what stopped my heart is, how do you stop the Gulf Stream, or pardon me, the jet stream? And this just happened conveniently. But I figured out the way. There was an unmanned aerial satellite vehicle that kind of disappeared off its course on July 29th. And that's the replacement for the space shuttle. It disappeared for 2 weeks. And its ability to steer by remote control from the Earth, it can change courses, drop something, come back on a next loop around the Earth, pick it up, and you'd never know. But luckily we did know, because amateur astronomers were following it. And when it went missing on July 29th, they knew right away something had happened. So that's the beauty, I guess, of our technological world. At our fingertips, we have the technology through things like Google Earth or our telescopes and our computers to almost be at the technical ability of our intelligence agencies in the 80s and 90s. And that can be enough.
Mm-hmm. Now, George, we have very little time left, so would you give out the name of your show again and how people can find it?
Well, we're on www.thatchannel.com, and the show is called Conspiracy Cafe. We have quite a repertoire of archive shows, so a lot of the things that we've talked about in passing tonight, you can listen to the whole nine yards in the podcast file, and that's the beauty of it. It's all there, and I seldom ever have to eat my words. I'm still waiting. I have the ketchup bottle on the plate, but once you see the pattern recognition, an animal in the forest knows when it hears a twig snap to bolt.
Mm-hmm.
We don't. It may be the hunter. It could be the twig just snapped, but they always assume it's the hunter, because Bambi doesn't want to end up on somebody's plate. So right away, he bolts. And that's one of my little Georgisms I came out with, is the world moves at the speed of the predator, not the prey. And we have to teach ourselves to catch up so we don't be the prey any longer.
We're going to have you on again, George, maybe in December, I think, because I'm pretty much booked all the way through now until December. But I'd like to have you on again, because there's a lot more questions that I would like to talk about what's really going on in the world. And by December, we'll know a few more things that maybe people need to learn about, too. Do you have a website at all, George?
Unfortunately, no. Everything's on my podcast file. I had a website before, but some rather unfriendly people did some rather unfriendly things to it from time to time. So I just figured, you know, what I have to say goes back right from day one on the start of my shows, and there's a synopsis and a picture with every one. So, you know, you can catch up on anything and everything we said, or just look back in time to say, what really did happen, or what's another possibility about what happened? Because we're only asking questions. We can't have court-ready proof to get a conviction. That's why I deal in the conspiracy world. What if? Could this be? Because maybe it is. Frequently, the conspiracies are true. And one that I like to torment mainstream media people with, because I see so many at work, but I remember when they joked at me once to say, oh, there's the guy who does the conspiracy type of show. I just go, well, you know what the first conspiracy was, don't you? And they look at me like, yeah, what? The world is round, right? You were taught it was flat, and anybody who thought differently was crazy. because the people who knew it was round were taking advantage of that information for their own profit and benefit, and they made you think it's flat so that you fall off and get eaten by sea monsters and stay home.
That's a great thing. Now, George, one more time, quickly give out the name of your show and where they can find it.
Conspiracy Cafe, and it's at www.thatchannel.com.
Great, George. Thank you very much for taking the time to be on the show. It was worth it. And like I said, we'll get you back on in December because there's a lot more things that would be probably fun to talk about. So thank you for taking the time.
Oh, thank you. It was a lovely thing. Bye.
You're very welcome. I'd like to thank you, the listeners. I hope you all enjoyed the show. And keep listening. There's more to come. May God bless all of you and have a great week. Take care. Bye now.